Hi, this is Paul. I'm making this video in Cairns, Australia. I came out a little bit early to do a little vacation because just experiencing the trip, I knew that I'd be jet lagged and I didn't want to be jet lagged for the conference. So I came out a little bit early with my family and we've been having an amazing vacation. Yesterday we were snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef. The day before that we were exploring saltwater crocodiles and feeding cassowaries and petting koalas. So we've just been having a great time. The weather's a little cloudy right now, and I might do an interview with a radio station in Melbourne. So I thought I would work some more on my talks. Now, I'm going to do a rough draft for at least some of my talks because I keep changing them. I keep doing an outline, I keep planning them, and then I think about more stuff, and I think, oh, that's more important than the other one, and so I exchange the priority, and so on and so forth. So I thought I'd make a couple little videos while I'm here at the Airbnb that I'm staying in. There's a decent internet connection, so I ought to be able to upload it, and we'll see how my little Surface Pro does with all of this software. I'm going to be starting the first talk with an interview that I did with John Anderson. I did a little interview with him, and I'd have segments introducing each of the talks. I'm not going to play that. I'll save that. That'll be the exclusive release at the conference. So March 30, St. James Cathedral. I'll put the links down in the notes. And then I'll be taking a little clip from Jordan Peterson's recent March question and answer on the questions he should be asked, which I thought was a really terrific question. And I thought he really gave an excellent answer, because his answer was basically, why aren't the journalists more interested in what on earth is happening and why it's happening? Because actually his ascent has been quite dramatic. Some of you may be aware of James Beverly's little book that he put out on Amazon, Understanding Jordan Peterson. Now, the bulk of this book is an outline of links of relevant Jordan Peterson material sort of from the beginning. And so if you're studying Jordan Peterson in an in-depth way, this book is really quite indispensable. Now, many of you who are watching this video know the Jordan Peterson timeline. In the 1970s and 80s, he, as a boy and a young man, experienced the Cold War, and he was drawn to the question, why would the world go to the brink of destruction over ideological difference? That seems strange when you consider the materialist or physicalist assumptions about what human beings are. If in fact our happiness and our lives are predominantly the material well-being of ourselves as a species, why would we put all of that at risk over differences in what could be described in our story verse, political or religious differences? Now this is actually a situation that I've heard few materialists significantly engage, which is that we, and this is really at the heart of Jordan Peterson's work, we live for meaning even more than we live for stuff. And Dostoevsky, of course, got into this, Tolstoy got into this, and Jordan Peterson following them, trying to figure out why on earth the world would nearly kill itself over ideological and political differences between the Soviet Union and the United States, or the Western democracies. Why would this be if we were as the materialist conception asserts that we are? That piece of evidence doesn't fit the data. The story, if we simply are material creatures who, like the crocodiles I saw at the crocodile farm, If we as human beings simply want to have a safe place to sleep, a good meal every day, and some of our other biological needs met, why would we be willing to put all of this at jeopardy just for elements of the story verse? So 1970s, Cold War, 93 to 97. He's lecturing at Harvard, and you can go back on YouTube and find some of those Harvard recordings, and you can see he's already well on his way working out the answer to this question. University of Toronto, 1998 and following, became a full tenured professor. 1999, published Maps of Meaning, which was the end of 15 years of working on this question. Why is meaning so foundational to us? 2004, you can find him doing a Public Television Ontario mini version of Maps of Meaning that you can also find on YouTube. Now, he labored and was a popular professor at University of Toronto. In fact, had a bit of a cult following. A number of his students really found their lives changed by his teaching. But he really got discovered during the C-16 controversy. In May 2016, C-16 was proposed. In September 2017, as Peterson tells the story, he was bothered by this. He was bothered by it in terms of a number of areas, but I think predominantly the compelled speech aspect. And so as he described in this one lecture, he was kind of ruminating on this, and often when he'd ruminate on something, he would get up and write about it, but he had been playing with YouTube, so he decided instead to do a YouTube video about it. And that video went viral. In fact, September 28, the National Post had an article on his video screed that he did against C-16. And suddenly he's all over the news. After one of the issues with C-16 was the legislation that said that misgendering someone was a violation of their human rights, and someone who did such things would be subject to a tribunal. A lot of people scoffed at that and said, no, that's an overreaction. But October 3, just a few days later, he got two letters of caution from his employer over doing just this, which in many ways validated the concern and said, this isn't just an overblown concern. University of Toronto is willing to fire a tenured professor over not even an accusation of him doing this, but even simply resisting the policy. October 12, 2016 was the famous suspender video, and this was the video that caught my attention, where you had, this video was actually made by the people who had organized a protest against him, and I was so impressed at the demeanor he had towards the students, towards his protesters, that drew my attention and brought me into this new journey of mine, which has been basically trying to answer the question that the journalists won't ask about Jordan Peterson. Why this man at this time, being so influential and transformative and becoming so famous so fast? Now, a lot of the answers to this question will be far longer than any little three-talk presentation I can give in Melbourne, Australia. But this question deserves to be answered, because generally speaking, if you see a big reaction to something in a person, you know that there's something deep underneath. That is at least as true when it comes to a society. After this, his patron grows, people hear that he might get fired and they don't want to see him lose his job or lose his welfare, so his Patreon support explodes, and now suddenly he doesn't necessarily need the job from University of Toronto. May 16, 2017, a few months later, he rents the Isabel Bader Theatre in Toronto and begins his biblical series. And this is also something that caught my attention. He's renting a 600-seat auditorium and he's selling it out every time with rambling speculations and ponderings about the Bible. That caught my attention, because I know some really terrific preachers in Toronto. Phil Reinders, in fact, is a friend of mine who preaches at Knox Church just outside the University of Toronto, and I'm sure there are empty seats in his place. And Phil is a tremendous preacher. John Sook, former minister in the Christian Reformed Church, left the Christian Reformed Church for a mainline United Church of Canada congregation in Toronto. Also, this was a top preacher in the Christian Reformed Church, also has empty seats. Now, he's gone mainline, and so there's some dynamics in that. But why on earth would Jordan Peterson be able to sell out? I mean, you can get a free seat in just about any church anywhere. But Jordan Peterson was selling seats at $35 or $40 a pop, and people were flying in from all over the world to listen to him lectures. And he'd post his lectures on YouTube, and before you knew it, hundreds of thousands, even millions of views. What on earth is going on? Now, his status rocket really took off when he published his book, 12 Rules for Life. Now, he had been working on this book long before C16 or any of this other stuff had happened. And actually, a lot of what's in this book he had developed through Quora, which is an online question and answer site. And what he had done was he had basically been trying to game the system. What are questions that people are really interested in? Now, he's a social scientist, so this probably began in some ways as sort of a hobby of his, very much connected with his thesis. And he developed some questions and answers that were very popular on Quora. Now, it's pretty smart to do this and make a book out of those answers, because you're probably guaranteeing yourself at least a reasonable bestseller. But in combination with all the press and all the nerve that he touched on the gender pronoun issues, this was like gasoline on a fire. Whereas before he could fill the Bader Theater of 600, now he starts a book tour and he is regularly filling venues of 2,000 or 3,000 or more, in Melbourne, in fact, something upwards of 5,000 at $50 or $100 or $150 a seat, people wanting to listen to him. And what he does at his book tour is sort of ramble like he does with his biblical series. What on earth is going on? And well, this is why, in a sense, when I started making YouTube videos about Jordan Peterson, I had zero following for years for the Freddie and Paul show and sermons that I had posted. Suddenly, hundreds and then thousands of people want to listen to even just little old me ramble on about rambling Jordan Peterson. So what on earth is going on? Now, clearly part of this is the culture war and politics and religion. Now, in a loose sense, but in a far more complex way, politics is applied religion. And if you understand that definition of mine, you will understand a bit about my definition of religion. It's sort of like the relationship between technology and technology as applied science. Science is kind of the formative aspect, and technology follows it, at least in our modern frame. In the pre-modern world, of course, politics was religion and religion was politics in many ways. Now, there was always tension between the priesthood and the king, but those kinds of things and that relationship was well known in the ancient world. Now, Jordan Peterson is a cornerstone of what came to be known as the intellectual dark web. The intellectual dark web is kind of a loose-knit group. They're not really a group. They're not really an institution. Eric Weinstein coined the term, but they're politically diverse. So you had Bernie Sanders supporters like Brett and Eric Weinstein. You had a Hillary supporter like Sam Harris, and you had a conservative political pundit like Ben Shapiro, and they're all kind of combined into this. And this, in many ways, gives us a hint into the political moment that is going on. But political buckets are difficult, and for me, and every time I mention this, I get shocked reactions in my video, because for me, I grew up in an African-American community. My father had a church which was primarily made up of African-American individuals in Paterson, New Jersey. I grew up voting Democrat. I'd always been, in a sense, a liberal Democrat, because the black folks that I grew up with and those who had influenced my father, they all voted Democratic, so I voted Democratic. And in fact, in the congregation I serve in Sacramento, California, it's incredibly racially diverse and it's incredibly politically diverse. The Christian Reformed Church tends to heavily vote conservative, Republican, but in our little church in Sacramento, there are individuals who are are liberal Democrats and individuals who are conservative Republicans and individuals who lean libertarians. And so these political and religious buckets really don't necessarily match. Now, the intellectual dark web is, again, tends to be framed in a political aspect. Only Ben Shapiro is a theist. All the rest of them are atheists, and they're all, I would assert, are modernists and classical liberals like Jordan Peterson. But when it comes to the religious aspect, Peterson is different. May 25, 2018, Bernie Schiff, who was a colleague, was a colleague of Jordan Peterson's at University of Toronto. In fact, one of the individuals that recruited him there told a really interesting story in what was sort of a hit piece on Peterson. It was entitled, "I Was Jordan Peterson's Strongest Supporter. Now I Think He's Dangerous." Dangerous? Why dangerous? Why, as an academic, would you use such a provocative word? Or maybe the editors put it in there. And he tells this story. Several years ago, Jordan Peterson told me he wanted to buy a church. This was long before he became known as the most influential public intellectual in the Western world, which is what David Brooks of the New York Times called him. As he was described in the pages of the New York Times a few months ago, it was before he was fancied to be a truth-telling sage who inspired Legion, the author of one of the best-selling books in the world this year. He was just my colleague and friend. I assumed it was for a new house. There was a trend in Toronto of converting religious spaces. Why would you convert religious spaces? Because they were no longer in demand by religious people in a place like Toronto. And we've been seeing this trend certainly in Europe and Canada, perhaps in Australia, and we've been seeing it even in the very religious United States. There's a trend in Toronto of converting religious spaces vacant because of the dwindling congregations into stylish lofts. But he corrected me. He wanted to establish a church, he said, in which he would deliver sermons every Sunday. Now that's interesting. Peterson is different. And this is part of the reason that Peterson himself began having some talks with Sam Harris. Sam Harris, one of the youngest of the four new horsemen of the new atheist apocalypse. And I'll talk about their talks as we get into some of the successive talks that I'll be doing. The thing that drew my attention, however, was how many people who had been Sam Harris fans began following Jordan Peterson. How many, mostly young men, who, when it comes to church, are one of the toughest groups to reach. How many young men began describing themselves as, "I was a big Sam Harris fan, I was really into him, I started listening to Jordan Peterson, and now I'm not so sure." Not so sure about what? Not so sure about my atheism. Not so sure about dismissing the Bible out of hand. Not so sure about dismissing religion or the church out of hand. In fact, many of these young men started finding their ways into churches, and many of the churches had no idea what to do with them. Another thing that I began to discover I started making YouTube videos. And as I made YouTube videos, because people couldn't get in touch with Jordan Peterson's because he's so outrageously busy, and I seemed available, and YouTube was promoting my videos, basically because I was talking about Jordan Peterson, people started writing me emails and writing me letters and wanting to talk to me. And I eventually realized how many common conversations I was having online repeatedly, that I began to ask people if they'd be willing to let me post some of my conversations with them. Because part of what, as a pastor, I knew many of these individuals would need would be community. They would need to find other people who were like themselves, dealing with the same questions and answers, wanting to know what to do with this new reality in their lives. I also began holding meetups in my church of individuals who wanted to talk about Jordan Peterson. One of the things that I discovered in talking to people and also going to these book tour events was that people could go to the book tour and listen to Jordan Peterson ramble on about what he does. And then they would want to talk about it. But in many ways, partly because of the hit job done on Jordan Peterson by the media in the United States, there was no one to talk with. In fact, many of them kept their interest in Jordan Peterson secret. They wouldn't admit to their left-leaning friends and former political compatriots that they were fascinated with this man and they were interested in the Bible, and they might even sneak into a church. And so who are they going to talk to? So I thought, they need people to talk to. They can talk to me, we can talk online, but they also need meetups. They need to be able to find each other and process these kinds of things together. Now, my meetups were not by any way standard evangelistic events where I would try to bring these people and convince them to be Christians. My meetups have been purely process oriented. If people are going to change their mind or develop their thinking about something, they need space to talk out loud. And that's basically what I've been giving people in their meetups. And so they can come in and say pretty much anything they want about me or Jordan Peterson or God or the Bible, believing or unbelieving, skeptical or whatever, and I'll allow it. Because again, my belief is that anyone who's going to change their mind needs the space to talk things out, and the better information we can give them, the better decisions they'll make. Now, I'm not alone in this. Two individuals whose names I put down here, Glenn Scrivener, who is an evangelist in the United Kingdom, and Father David Lewis, who is an Orthodox priest in Texas, in Dallas, Texas, were finding the same thing. Glenn had told me, I did a conversation with Glenn, and he had told me, I can't go anywhere without people coming up and wanting to talk about Jordan Peterson. Young men wanting to talk about Jordan Peterson, and they're interested in the Bible and interested in Christianity because of Jordan Peterson. Father David Lewis had a story similar to mine, in that he started watching me. He started with a meetup, and before you know it, he had people in his church wanting to talk about Jordan Peterson. Now, bear in mind, many pastors in the developed world today long for opportunities to share the gospel, long for opportunities to have conversations with atheists and skeptics and unbelievers and people who are wavering in their faith, substantive conversations about the Bible. And so as a pastor of a small church, I'd go for days and weeks, sometimes months, looking for opportunities to talk to anyone not already a Christian, not already in my church about this. And when those opportunities came around, those were gold star days. After starting to make videos about Jordan Peterson, I don't have enough time to do this. I basically have a link where people can sign up and talk to me about anything they want to talk about. And again, partly because of the content on my video, they line up to ask me questions about the Bible and about Jesus and about Jordan Peterson and about sorting themselves out. This has been by far the most fruitful ministry I've done in my life when it comes to Christian conversion and discipleship. Why? Because of Jordan Peterson, a guy who doesn't go to church, a guy who gets annoyed when people ask him if he believes in God, because he finds this to be a rather private thing and they shouldn't be nosing around in his personal spirituality. And this is the guy that's bringing this. Well, I think as Jordan Peterson said, this should be the question reporters are asking. And this has been the question that I've been asking, because why do really good Christians, evangelists, apologists, who've been doing, in my opinion, quite good work, why does this Jordan Peterson get better results than they do? And as a Christian minister, I need to know that. And I need to know that for reasons of my own faithfulness before God, because I'd hate to stand up there on Judgment Day and say, okay, Vander Clay, I gave you all these things, and here Jordan Peterson, who only acted as if I was real, hugely outperformed you as an evangelist. What's wrong with you? little bit later down the road, I came across a colleague of Peterson's named John Vervaeke. Now, poor John has kind of gotten swept into the draft of Jordan Peterson and all of this. He recently did an interview with Rebel Wisdom, who also rode Jordan Peterson's coattail after David Fuller did a really good documentary on Jordan Peterson fairly early on. But what John Vervaeke really woke me up to was the meaning crisis. I was reading Maps of Meaning. Why couldn't I figure out that actually this Jordan Peterson moment that we are having is far larger than Jordan Peterson? It's really about the long trends in Western civilization over the last 500, 600, 700 years, and other scholars, in fact, have been working on this, including John Vervaeke, whose work I've found helpful in this. See, the church in the West has been losing ground, so when Bernie Schiff imagined that Jordan Peterson wants to buy a church, the last thing he thinks is that he would actually start thinking about having services. What are you, nuts? Churches are on their way out, or so the West thinks. Read Charles Taylor's A Secular Age, if you can. Probably a book just as unreadable as Maps of Meaning. But Charles Taylor tries to go through the story of why 500 years ago, almost everyone in the world, and especially in Europe, believed in a God, and why now belief in God, in Charles Taylor's words, is no longer axiomatic. After 9/11, I'm going to run through some of this history in subsequent videos / lectures. After 9/11, new atheists came on with a vengeance. Why? Well, we're going to have to get into that question. Many are going from Christianity to pantheistic spirituality, and those of you who are pastors or church leaders know this is true. That many, in fact, are saying, I don't know if I can believe in Christianity's exclusive claims. I don't really think that could have any understanding or any meaning. I think more in God like Star Wars, like a force out there, but an impersonal force that maybe I can tap into. This gets into what Christian Smith called moralistic therapeutic deism, and that has become the predominant religion of the West. In fact, what things have been looking like, as Bernie Schiff had noted, was that, in fact, the West is on a one-way street. And modernists have been speculating that this was going to be true, and atheists have been proclaiming this to be true, that bit by bit by bit, we lose our religiosity and we become more and more secular. And in many ways, they had a lot of data to prove it, I think, until Jordan Peterson, because what I as a pastor began to see was that people were coming back out this street. When I had seen people going down the road of pantheistic spirituality or down the road of atheism, I had seen them going one way and never coming back. And now I saw them coming back. This from a guy who's allergic to church. Now, in my next two talks, I'm going to ask what happened to God in the last 500 years and how does Jordan Peterson change that trajectory? And I believe Jordan Peterson could be the most significant figure in this story since Charles Darwin. Could be. It's way, way too early to tell, but I think it could be that significant. His name will at least be remembered somewhere around a turning. My third lecture will be Meaning as Jordan Peterson's Sacrament. The Protestant Reformation fought about sacraments. That has everything to do with the early stages of the meaning crisis, the early stages of secularity. It has everything to do with neo-sacramentalism, what's happening in church planting today. And Jordan Peterson, in fact, I think is integral, is very much a part of this same trajectory. And then hopefully we'll have time for questions. So this is rough draft for Melbourne 1. And if you've not already signed up and you're able to go to the conference in Melbourne coming up later this week, come down. There's a Friday night social at a restaurant with finger foods and drinks if you're in the area. Saturday the 30th is a conference. And Sunday night is a meetup in which I will be present and just give a little bit of orientation about how I do meetups in California. So that's Sunday night there'll be a talk that I'll be giving again at St. James Cathedral. That one will be more specifically directed towards Christians, although I assume that many of the people in attendance from the conference will be Christians. Now this talk could change radically between now and Saturday. The reason being, the more I learn about the context, the more I learn about the people who'll be in attendance, the more I will adjust the talk, and I will be making a recording of the talk. It won't be quite as nicely framed here in YouTube land as this, but I'll talk to the conference organizers about permission to publish, to post that talk on my YouTube page. I bought a good camera and some equipment with me, so I can do that. So maybe I'll do two more of these today. I don't know. The family is out playing in the pool and enjoying the Coral Sea. I'm in a little Airbnb right off the coast. Just absolutely gorgeous. Loving Australia. What a fun country. What fun people. Really enjoying the whole thing. So those of you who are going to be in Melbourne this coming weekend, come by and see me. At this point, the conference doesn't look too crazy crowded, so there's plenty of room. And again, part of my interest in this is to get to meet as many of you as I can as individuals, and to get a sense of who you are, and to hear your story, and to see where it goes. So thanks for watching.